What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of the number one sports podcast in Southeast Metro Detroit. I'm your host, Connor. It's teaming up with C and V. I'm the C, and as always, with the V himself, Vladimir, back with another episode. The sun is still up while we're recording for probably the first time in months. I can see the sun in your reflection here on this beautiful Zoom. What's going on?
Yeah, I was going to bring up kind of the same thing that I am doing this recording without a light on in my room for the first time in months. I've got the window just creaked open a little bit. Nature is slowly healing. We're getting closer and closer to kind of that good weather. I got to go for a run outside for the first time, and obviously not taking Clemson aside when I went down a couple weeks ago, but went for a run in Michigan the first time in probably 6 months. So we are slowly getting back to normal. So I'm very excited for that. I'm doing well. I was just telling you beforehand, I'm due for my raise and my bonus tomorrow. So we'll see how that goes. I'll probably end up being disappointed like last year, and then we'll have to consider some career options, but we'll see how that goes before we continue that rant. How are you?
I'm good. I'm on spring break. So I've treated myself to a nice vacation of working a normal 40-hour week instead of the 24 I work usually. So real exciting spring break for the last
No
one of my
crazy
life.
plans down to Fort Lauderdale or something.
No, unfortunately, I'm not going to be ripping it up in Fort Lauderdale with the 20-year-olds. As much as I would love to. I say that with sarcasm, of course, but I'm good. I really enjoy this time of year, not only from a weather and a more sunlight factor, but from a sports, factor as well. And we're going to get into some topics. We've kind of got multiple different sports to talk about here today: basketball, football, hockey, basically everything. But oh, and football. We're going to be talking about basically everything today. So I don't know. This got me riled up. I'm ready to go. I'm in a good mood. Should be a good episode.
Do it.
Where should we start today? Probably with the hoops.
Absolutely. How we always do, Michigan State basketball.
Michigan State basketball, or the team that has kept on giving in terms of successful results. Big Ten champions in 2025 regular season. First time in 5 seasons since 2020, before the season that got shut down, or the postseason that got shut down due to COVID. The Michigan State Spartans are unanimous champions, a two-game lead. I believe the only game there's the we missed the Iowa game. I don't know if you have anything to add there. It was another one of those
I'll make it quick.
performances.
I'll make it quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, slow start. They jumped on us early. Trey Holloman energized us in the second
He is a
half.
hollering man, both in
And
that
he is a
game and the
hollering
Michigan
man as
game.
well. And we'll be talking about him later, but ride Trey Holloman's energy. And Iowa, as I think we said, probably in the lead up, Iowa's not a good basketball team. And as soon as MSU kind of either woke up or stopped looking ahead at Michigan and realized there was still a game today, they kind of completely clamped him down and ended up winning that game.
Yeah, I think they're just finally realizing that second half, hitting some shots. Both games, we'll get into Michigan a little more in depth here in a second, but looks like guys got their swagger back from a shooting perspective, specifically the guards. I mean, we've talked about Jace being, doing what he's done the past 3 weeks, but Trey and Jaden Akins both looking like either their stroke is back from a 3-point standpoint, and that's what came to fruition in that second half. That Iowa team doesn't play much defense this year, and that by law of averages was due for a 50-point half as Michigan State put on in that one. And then moving on to the big one, last Sunday at the Breslin, senior day, the final game of the regular season for both teams, Michigan State. Michigan State, this one wasn't even close. I mean, you could say the second half where Michigan cut it down to, I think, 11 at one point. This was a 27-point game at one point in the second first half. I think it was a 23-point game at half. Michigan looked all out of sorts. If your name wasn't Vladislav Golden, even him, like I thought he hit a lot of tough shots, and Michigan State made him get his. I mean, I know he went for almost 30 points in that game. I think there was at one point where he had like 14 points, and the Michigan had like 21 or 22 total points. Just couldn't shoot. They missed some open looks. But again, like what this team has done all year is they don't give teams a ton of those, and they make shooting, especially the three ball, very difficult. And Michigan offensively never truly looked comfortable. And on offense, I'll kind of give it over to you, but a team that looks way more confident. Jace Richardson had a nice night. Trey Holloman, aside from the extracurriculars at the end of the game, goes for 20 points. Jay Nakins again shooting the ball with some confidence, and especially in that first half.
Yeah, I mean, I won't add much just because, as you said, this game was over in the first half. I think, I don't know, was it a 25-point lead at one point in the first half, and then you kind of just coast in the second half. So, like, did Michigan close it down? Sure, but I don't think it's because Michigan did something correctly. I think it's just Michigan State just went into neutral and said, all right, we're gonna run the clock out. In terms of kind of the shooting, you're right. I mean, Akins is pulling. I'm quick box score watching 3 of 9 from deep. That might be the most 3-pointers a single person's taken on MSU all season. As a team, 37.5% from deep, which that's an improvement on us.
That's almost double an improvement on us this
Yeah,
year.
so that's good there. Obviously, all the players got in the game. It's senior day. I don't have much to talk about the actual game. Like I said, this was first half was non-competitive because Michigan wasn't able to. Second half was non-competitive because Michigan State took stopped trying.
And from a Michigan standpoint, I think they're projected right now as a 6 seed. They were as high as, I want to say, 11 or 12 in the rankings at one point. Dusty May gets his extension. He has that locker room speech that's kind of going viral now. And they proceed to go 2-4 with 2 double-digit losses to their rival. And mixed in there a couple of blowout losses to Illinois as well. Looking like a team, and I don't want to be too, we'll get into being critical about Dusty May. I don't want to be too critical on the actual job he's done this season, because this was a team that was a quad four game last year, and is now looking like a top five or 16 seed team, and finished second in a deep, albeit not that great, but deep Big Ten is what I'll call it. Deserves some credit, and I think he is here to stay. And that makes what happened extracurricular that wise so much more important, I'd argue. So, do you want to talk about it? Get into the logo business, Michigan and their inability to kind of deal with logos on floors and ground and grass?
I don't really know where to start because I think there's many different angles to approach it from. I think it's awfully convenient that for one of the earlier free throws, nobody's standing on the logo, and as soon as the late free throws show up, suddenly people are there. There are some clips of them saying, "Don't move, don't move, don't move."
Yep.
There are.
Jaden Akins and Trey Holloman, like giving them the motion before the first free throw to back up.
Yeah, so then you have kind of the you have the post game presser. So again, I think there's a lot, there's many different ways to approach it. I think all of it kind of just boiled down to classic Michigan and the, I don't know if arrogance is the right word, maybe hypocrisy is a better word, because I'm old enough to remember about 5 months ago when Michigan planted a flag in the horseshoe, and all their fans beat their chest and said, "If you don't want us to celebrate, why don't you two play better in the game and beat us? And then maybe we won't do stupid things." And then here comes 5 months later, and now you have, "Well, that's not fair. The guy, he shouldn't have pushed him. He started it." It's like, which one do you want? Because I actually agree with him the first time. If you don't want someone to celebrate on your house, dunk on him. Beat the shit out of him. That's what Michigan State did. Michigan State was so good that they got to stop playing the actual sport for 20 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
And then you have the, "Oh, well, we didn't know." Yes, you did.
Yeah.
Dusty May, you're from the Big Ten, you've coached in Michigan, and you're just a human being with a brain. Not to mention someone who that's your life. You work in the industry. The Michigan
25
State
years.
tradition of kissing the floor is a tradition.
Not only that, but say you were ignorant enough and stupid enough to somehow be and to be coached to be the coach of the University of Michigan and not know of this tradition. There is a 0% chance that the refs, either before it went down, most likely before the game, said, "Hey, coaches," or, "I'm going to talk to each coach, gather around. Hey, listen, if this happens, just so you know, Michigan State has this thing. It's their senior day. If they're winning by X amount of points or winning in general, they're going to do this." And there's a 0.0% chance he was not told beforehand by a referee that this was going to
Can I
happen.
actually disagree with you?
Really?
I don't think it happened. You know why? Because it's never been a problem before.
Yeah.
Even for Michigan. I was at the Breslin 6 years ago with in John Beilein's last year when we played him for a share of the Big Ten title against Purdue. And in the second half, when we overcame that deficit and the waffle guy was over there smelling the aroma and enjoying that comeback, I watched the Michigan players not do anything. This has never been an issue for anybody and Michigan in the past. I don't understand. It's
I
beside
also
me.
put a lot of it on the players themselves, like the Pooh players that actually did this and said, "We're not moving." I actually think there's a world where Dusty May didn't like go out there and explicitly tell them
To ruin it, yeah, that's
to
fair.
say that, and that those players took it upon themselves. I know the one is the fat kid that had an offer from Michigan State and really liked Michigan State in the recruiting process. And obviously people go back and like look back on it. And that seemed like after he got his offer, Michigan State kind of cooled on him a little bit and realized he wasn't necessarily a Big Ten level prospect. And I think he's a preferred walk on at Michigan and hasn't really played much at all. I think he's only gotten in like 5 or 6 games this year. So from a player perspective, that's a bitter player, at least on face, without knowing the situation exactly. And he took it upon himself, or they took it upon themselves to. And also, like this kid, a freshman, is born in what's a freshman born in now? 2007?
That's crazy to even think about, but probably.
2007? This tradition's 10 years older than you. So, and you've lived in the state your whole life. So, you were recruited by the school, you had an offer by the school, you wanted to go to the school at one point. That's where I have the hardest time believing that there were good intentions or no intentions by what went on.
I think that's a really good way of looking at it, that maybe this was not a directed from the top down, but it also at the same time, I don't think Dusty May helped himself in the press
By
conference.
saying, "I don't know,"
Oh yeah, well, since when are we not allowed to stand at in the middle of the court during free throws? It's like, okay, come on, Dusty, just say, hey, we didn't, or I didn't know, or that something was going on, because that's just a stupid look. I don't have too much more for it because. It's at the end of the day, it's stupid.
it's stupid, and it's like a problem with that involves one party every time.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It is what it is. You don't really. It doesn't matter. Like you're still raising your banner if you're Michigan
That's
State.
what I mean. It didn't bother me that much because of that. Like,
Yeah. I think I've kind of said I think everything I needed to. It's just.
yeah. I guess moving forward, Big Ten tournament this week will be what goes on before our next episode. And obviously, we'll break down the bracket next week, which one of my more favorite episodes to do all year.
Oh, yeah.
Michigan State, one seed, they'll play Friday at noon. The matchup is the winner of, I believe, Indiana and Oregon. Two teams that are playing good basketball right now. Oregon's won their last six, I think, and last 7 of 8 after UConn had put a beat down on them after a double-digit second half comeback. And then an Indiana team that is also playing much better basketball and fighting for their tournament life. I think they're right now either in the first four in. I think the last bracket I saw is that's where they were. And they've also been playing good basketball recently, and they beat you. So, no easy matchups in this Big Ten tournament. Like I said, I don't think any what you learned on Michigan State's, historic win streak, I don't think that's an exaggeration to do what they did win the last seven games the way they did.
against that
With
qualified
not
opposition as well.
and with, like, the Big Ten awards came out, not a single first ten team all Big Ten, not a single second team all Big Ten player, just a team of good players. I know Jace Richardson was named to the all freshman team. Jace and Jaden Akins were third team all Big Ten, and Jaden Akins was first team all defense. But with this team and this group, the way they did it, there's still no easy games in this Big Ten tournament. And I believe from there, you're probably going to play the winner of, I think it's Wisconsin and Purdue would be your semifinal, and then moving into the final. And I think Wisconsin's probably the second best team in the Big Ten, even though they had a tough loss last week. So no easy wins. I would like to see them win at least one game in this tournament. I think they're the best team in the Big Ten. They should win it all. But there is a small part of me as a fan that, yeah, you have the NC State miracle runs, which he got fired.
He did. Well, he was going to get fired last year too, and then that crazy half second or half court bank shot went in, and it's like, all right, you're in the tournament, so now we'll give you a chance.
Yeah. But still, the logistics of being in a Final Four and fired less than a year later is just
It's impressive.
crazy. I lost my train of thought on that, but whatever, man. Michigan State doing their thing in the Big Ten tournament. Oh, my point was, is I get scared for the most part, aside from those runs, like I just said, is teams that win their conference tournament actually don't do that well in the tournament historically. And there's a part of me that is a little scared of that. So I would still like to see them win the Big Ten tournament. Fuck the statistics. Let's just win it all.
I love it. I've done no kind of research ahead for this tournament. I know we kind of play the Friday noon game, but other than that, I don't know who we're potentially playing, so I have nothing else to add on that.
Yeah. Where to next?
The Red Wings, you can talk, or the Dead Wings, and you can talk about those
The
guys.
Dead Wings, and I'll kind of mix NHL trade deadline, which was on Friday, into this. Red Wings have really struggled kind of since the Four Nations. I think they're 2-9 or 2-8 since then, including a 6-game losing streak now, a heartbreaking loss yesterday. And on top of that, they have, I believe it's the hardest, if not the second hardest schedule remaining of any team in the NHL to close out this season. They've lost the wild card spot that they had, I believe, this time last week when we talked. And it went from, like Vladdy, you mentioned before we started recording, and 2 weeks ago is like, oh, like Todd McClellan's brought life to this lineup. All the young players kind of seem to be coming into form and blossoming before our eyes. And now you don't long no longer feel that way. Larkin and Raymond, your two best players who were providing really the only scoring 5-on-5, have been in a bit of a slump. They've actually started to come out of it, even though they're still losing. But you've realized that if those two aren't really doing anything, this team has no secondary scoring. You lost some role pieces like Andrew Kopp for the season. And it just kind of speaks to what Yzerman has done really, really poorly throughout his tenure. And that's fill in the roster with NHL pieces. I'm not even going to pretend to be critical of his drafting or the prospect pool that the Red Wings have. That's just, quite frankly, be wrong. He's done a great job in that. You've seen it, Mo Sider. A guy that was projected to be in the teens in the draft. He takes it 6 overall as a number one defenseman in the league. Simon Edvinson, Lucas Raymond. Now you've got Marcus Casper, who's played, had a nice full first season. You have a set later picks like Albert Johansson coming into form this year. That hasn't been the problem. And I don't think that will be the problem moving forward. But as this young core does mature and does get better, as they actually have, believe it or not, despite this losing streak, is you have to be able to put role pieces around them. What Julian Brisebois, after you left in Tampa, did was sign guys like Blake Coleman, was sign guys like Nick Paul, third, fourth, even middle six wingers on good contracts and good deals that are going to contribute and actually get the best out of your young core. And he has not done that at all.
Okay.
He's given Go
I was
ahead.
gonna say, can I make a comparison? And I think that maybe this will tie into the football before I let you go back, but there's more to being a GM than drafting.
Yeah.
As you say, and you go to the football thing, and maybe I'm starting to get a little worried with kind of the Brad Holmes thing. Is it seems like everything he does is focused on, oh, we'll just draft, and then we'll just sign our guys. It's like, Brad, if you want to be one of the best of the best of the best in your realm, in your sphere of what you do, you need to do more than that. You need to be Howie Roseman. You need to take chances on Saquon Barkley. You need to trade for AJ Brown. You need to find moments to deal players here and there, not just, oh, I'm good at drafting. You need to be Brett Veach over in Kansas City. Oh, Tyreek Hill, I don't think you're necessary to my success. Out the door with you. In comes the next guy. Oh, L'Jarius Sneed, I don't want to pay you. Out the door with you. In comes the next guy. It's not just drafting, or it's not just one thing. You have to be well-rounded as a GM. And I think, like, as you're kind of saying, it seems like he lacks in many of the departments that are not drafting.
And that pro scouting in general, and that I don't even want to say really the trade market, because they haven't really done anything. They didn't do much at this deadline. They pick up another goaltender, which Mrazek is, say what you want, probably maybe an upgrade from what they've had currently going on, but
Wasn't he one
it's
of the worst goalies in the league statistically before they got him, albeit
he
on the Chicago
on the
Blackhawks?
worst team.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I say maybe an upgrade, and you add a 35-year-old fourth liner to the mix to get rid of a 24-year-old first liner. It just made no sense. But yeah, that the whole pro scouting thing, and it's a great example with Brad Holmes, and I'd argue it's even more important on the hockey side. When in football, you can guarantee usually. I'm making a bit of an overgeneralization, but that wherever you pick in that first round, that guy is going to be a contributor
Yes.
the next year on the roster. If you're picking past like 20 in the NHL, there's not even a guarantee he plays an NHL game sometimes. And if you're not picking in the top five, you're looking at least a year and a half to 2 years before that guy makes the roster. Even a top 10 pick sometimes takes 2 years to come to form, sometimes even three. So it's even uber more important when you are there's even more risk and there's more volatility, and these guys take longer to be able to fill in the roster with ready now NHL caliber players for what you need to win today. And I look at the greatest example of that is the place he just left, and his antecessor. Is that a real word? The person that followed him.
Successor, I guess.
Successor, yeah, dumb.
Antecessor, that sounds like a law school term to me.
Yeah, it's probably just a made-up word. I do that thing. I'm better now, but like 2 years ago when I first started law school, I would just say big words, only half knowing their meaning to just sound smarter. I've
Anyone
gotten
ever
rid of
snicker
that.
at you?
Yeah, I've gotten rid of that habit a little bit, thankfully. I think it's just gotten stupider, but
That's funny.
anyways, Julian Breezeball in Tampa, who. I'll get into some of the bigger moves this trade deadline, but he added Yanni Gourde and Bjorkstrand, two role players. Yanni Gourde was actually a third line, kind of role player on their back-to-back cup teams, brings him back from Seattle, has to probably overpay, gives up a first-round pick. They've picked once in the – they're kind of the Rams of the NHL. They've picked once in the first round in the last 4 seasons. That was 30th overall, and that was our man Isaac Howard at Michigan State, who's currently second in Hobey Baker voting. And they won't pick again until 2029. So he had a quote recently, and I actually just heard this on a podcast earlier today, that was, our window is now. We're trying to win now. We think we can win this year, next year, and the year after. I'm trying to get players that can help my team win. Whether that's tomorrow, whether that's the next day or the next year. And that's the approach you need to have if you ever want to win in this league. You look at, I'm going to have to group them into the Buffaloes of the world, where if you keep redoing and rebuilding and waiting on a pool of prospects instead of a handful or one or two prospects, you'll just never get there in this league. You've mentioned no other GM would be given this kind of leeway, and I counter with you're right. And while I don't think he's been a complete and utter failure, I think the job has been frustratingly long, and he has committed malpractice in certain aspects of his role, and you're now kind of stuck with him, like you were, and you hope that it's like this example, like Michigan was with Jim Harbaugh, and that you, it was time, things have gotten better, but they're not where we need them to be, and we kind of signed the big name, and we don't know who else to get type thing, and now you're stuck with his long-term plan and his long-term vision, where you would never, ever even entertain that if his name was not Steve Eisenman.
Yeah, I'm obviously not hockey guy here on the pod, so I'll just kind of say I don't understand hockey to be able to break it down at the level that you do. I just understand logic. You have the third longest postseason drought in NHL history. Obviously, that was not his fault. The team he inherited was the team he inherited. The situation was the situation. But at some point, you need to do something. And I love watching people say, well, he's building a long-term cup contender. Well, the one way to contend for the cup is to actually make the playoffs. You cannot contend from the cup for the cup in the NHL lottery. So that I don't know what cup contender he is building or has built yet, but that's all I'll say from a logic standpoint. Obviously, I don't know the hit rates on late first round picks the way you can provide to kind of the people. So I'll just kind of give my logical take of I'm an impatient human being, and at some point, if you've shown zero results after 7 years, I have to look at you and just say, what are we doing?
Yeah, and I wasn't even someone that thought they should have made a big splash in this free agency. I didn't think they needed to go get Brad Marchand, who the Bruins split with after 14 years in a Stanley Cup, and their captain over $1 million difference in salary, or a Mikko Rantanen, who played 12 games in Carolina, said, "I won't sign with you. I'll only sign with these four teams," and then gets moved to Dallas, who was one of those four teams. But I would have liked to see something, maybe, or some indication that this was going to get better. Not this. This is the third straight season where, in this last week of February to second week of March, they've gone on an over 5-game losing streak, the third year in a row.
That's actually
And
kind of impressive.
all three of those seasons, they've been within 4 points of a playoff spot.
I can't add to that. So if you're done, do we get to the meat and potatoes of the episode?
Yeah, we'll switch over to the NFL. One of the fun days of the, it's like this combine day, although that kind of passed and I didn't watch a single thing, so I guess should
I'll
we
say
even count that?
no. Actually, I'll counter the combine's kind of losing its luster just because all the good guys who
Don't
understand what where their
participate.
draft yeah where their draft status is, they have nothing to participate for in the drills. Obviously, they're obviously there for interviews and kind of how to not appear like a dickhead to the teams. But yeah, so I will say the combine has kind of lost its luster just because people have kind of realized I can only hurt myself by performing it if I'm a certain status. Obviously, if you're a guy who's a fringe first rounder, you can jump up draft boards the way a Matthew Golden went from who the fuck is this guy 8 months ago to this is considered wide receiver one by many people much smarter than us, which I totally don't understand. And we'll get into that as soon as we kind of start talking
Or you could
draft
be the other
prospects.
Texas guy that said he was going to run a 4-1 and ran a 4-5.
Yeah, Isaiah Bond. Don't talk to my darling like that. But I named a dynasty team after him. I'm tanking for him. But
Sorry.
no, you're good. Just getting into it, this wasn't the greatest blockbuster free agency legal tampering trade period that we've ever
Money
seen.
talks.
But there was definitely some surprises and some head scratching moves. If we want to talk about some of the moves that happened beforehand, Geno Smith, which I thought was one of the bigger surprises just because it came
Yeah.
out of nowhere, no smoke at all. Know anything, and then you just see a report from Schefter and from Pelissero, and it's like, oh yeah, Geno Smith plays for the Raiders now. He's been sent there for a third round pick, and you're like, wait, what? Because you didn't even realize that he was on the market. And then as more and more details came out, the Seahawks had made him an offer. He had countered for more money, and they said, well, you know what? For this money, we don't want you. Which honestly, I don't mind that from a Seahawk perspective, where it's like you don't want to tie yourselves to an awful contract and reset your franchise a couple of years.
Yeah.
Even though we will have to talk about the Seahawks. He goes to the Raiders. I think it's a good move for them. It's a fair price. You're not getting gutted in draft picks in terms of what you gave up. Geno is familiar with Pete Carroll. And I think most importantly, getting a Geno Smith as your quarterback is something you do to not even accelerate the rebuild. You just kind of try and skip the rebuild and say, we're just going to start with a proven veteran, a guy the coach knows, a guy who can run the offensive system that Chip Kelly, our offensive coordinator, wants to run. And I like it from a Raiders perspective. They're kind of, they seem like one of those teams that is constantly linked to Ashton Jeanty. We'll see how that happens come draft time, but the Raiders do not seem to be like a team that is trying to build. They look like a team that's ready to jump out the gate strong, competing in a ridiculously tough division.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how much they compete in that
I
division.
agree.
Yeah, I didn't think it actually made a ton of sense to me on face. And then your explanation does a good job of saying why it does make sense from certain perspectives. I mean, you signed Max Crosby to be the highest paid player at his position for a full like 4 days, but I mean, it's pointing in the right direction, and you're like, I think like they were a quarterback away from being a little more friskier than they were last year. You can't play with, why am I blanking on the Purdue kid's
Gardner
name?
Minshew or Aiden
Gar
O'Connell?
Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew. We'll throw that in there too. And I think this move is kind of one of those things where a team like that, you look at a team like the Jets, what they did yesterday with Justin, or was that today? I get my days
I
mixed
think
up
yesterday with Fields.
with Fields, in that this quarterback class isn't great. So some of these teams that don't want to wait for the perfect guy and continue to win 3 games a year in order to get him are looking at guys that they can afford and they know can at least play competent football at the NFL level. And hey, maybe we can go and fill in other pieces with not having to spend $50 million on a quarterback.
I love that kind of second part. Another trade that kind of, this one was not out of nowhere. DK Metcalf, he'd kind of been on the trade block, if you will, for maybe about a month now, or at least a couple of weeks. There were always the rumors, oh, he wants to play somewhere warm. Oh, he wants a good quarterback. And where does he get sent? To a place that is not warm and a place that has no quarterback. I have no understanding. Like, this trade for me, from honestly both sides, makes
Yep.
absolutely no sense. From the Pittsburgh side, you spend a second round pick, which honestly, pick wise, probably fair value given DK's age. I know a lot of people immediately compared it to the AJ Brown trade from a couple of years ago, but AJ Brown was 25 at the time. DK's 28. That factors into things. They give him a 5-year, $150 million deal, which is crazy money. But most importantly, you actually have to look at this fit on the team. Him and George Pickens are the same player. They are a vertical X receiver, big-bodied guy. You don't need two of those on the field at the same time. You need one of those. You need your kind of chain mover. You need your intermediate guy.
I'll
So,
add one thing too, prone to going rogue.
oh, well, I was going to get to that. And that's before we even talk about what they do off the field or on the field, but not play related, when they're trying to fight somebody else on the team or somebody else wearing the other team's colors. So I don't understand that. And then, not to mention, you don't have a quarterback signed. So this makes no sense to me. I know there's the rumors that Pickens had kind of worn out his welcome in Pittsburgh, and maybe this is you planning for the future, and Pickens is not there after this season because it'll be year four and he's not a first round pick, so there's no 5th year option. Maybe this is, that's just them getting ahead of the curve, and we're going to look like idiots a year from now when they manage to pull some shrewd move off, because they are the Steelers and they're a pretty well-run franchise. But I don't understand it. You were hoping for Justin Fields. He goes to New York, and now you're kind of fighting for the scraps of Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers, and it's like, are we really going to run with that? So I don't love it from the Pittsburgh side. I honestly don't love it from the Seattle side either. Like, I understand cutting Tyler Lockett and aging Tyler Lockett at Tyler Lockett's contract value, which I think was in the high teens for millions of dollars, especially when as JSN had kind of replaced him as that chain mover. But DK is kind of the perfect complement to that, that can make sure that JSN cannot get doubled. You know what? If you had problems with DK Metcalf, you know what you should have done? You should do what the Cleveland Browns do. Just throw money at him that he cannot say no to. Because I don't know what Seattle's doing, and we'll talk about what they did at quarterback as soon as we get there, but that they look like a team where I just said, oh, well, they didn't want to get stuck tied to a bad quarterback, or they didn't want to get, or you say, as you said, they don't want to get stuck tanking for someone. But this just looks like they're getting stuck at the Washington Commanders of old, where it's like, you're gonna be 7-10 every season, or 6-11.
Right.
You're never gonna pick a quarterback, but you're never also gonna compete at the highest level. Because let's just get into it. They signed Sam Darnold, who was kind of the quote unquote big money, hot commodity free agent deal, or free agent quarterback of this cycle. He replaces Geno Smith, but I don't like the move because I don't think Sam Darnold's very good. And if you look at what Sam Darnold came from to what Sam Darnold's going to, it's night and day. Kevin O'Connell
Yeah.
was a coach of the year candidate. Kevin O'Connell is a, I don't want to say QB whisperer, but he's a guy who knows how to work with multiple different QBs. He knows how to tailor offenses to that guy's skill set. And more importantly, you had Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hawkinson. In Seattle, you have Jaxon Smith-Njigba, AJ Barner, and Jake Bobo. There's a little
Tell
bit of
you what.
a gap. There's a little bit of a gap there. So I don't love this. I don't think this is somehow an upgrade over Geno. I guess in the Seahawks' eyes, they got a mid quarterback for the contract they were okay with paying money for, but I thought that was a ridiculously stupid move. On the
Yeah.
DK Metcalf part. I guess I don't love the Darnold thing either, but somebody was gonna pay him, so
Yep. Don't have anything to add. You did a good job on that. I just think from the Steelers standpoint, though, like you're kind of trapped with Russell Wilson, in my opinion. Yeah, Aaron
probably.
Rodgers is still out there. What do you pay him? And for how long? And like, how can you stay? Like, it is kind of the definition of insanity of just like, well, we don't want to be this team that like go wins 10 games early on and then kind of blows out early and everyone knows really isn't a playoff team but makes the playoffs and lose by double digits in the first round. But then you go and make moves that just reiterate that goal.
Yeah, I think that the Steelers are kind of, I've said this, that they're a kind of a super version of those bad Commanders teams of old, where you're never going to be bad enough because your culture is so strong to be picking a top quarterback, and you're also never going to be good enough because you don't have a top quarterback to compete at the highest level with the Mahomeses, the Josh Allens of the world.
And at the very least, I think that the entertainment value of DK Metcalf and George Pickens
Oh, it's going to be.
fighting for one ball will be,
It's going to be box office.
yes, will be box office TV.
So next, again, I think this is, again, on the trade side. We'll talk about the signings, but this to me was the biggest head scratcher of the entire period. Laremy Tunsil gets sent from the Houston Texans to the Washington Commanders. The longtime all pro slash Pro Bowl level left tackle gets dealt for, I think it was a 2 in the future in 2026, a 3
Yeah.
this year, and then there might have been some other late round picks that I don't totally care for. On the good side, I love this for Washington. You get a top 5 left tackle to protect your quarterback, who is one of those quarterbacks where it's kind of always one hit away from permanent shoulder problems and never being able to throw the football again, like Cam Newton. And you're kind of reiterating that you think that last year was not a fluke. You think that this is a team that is built to win at the highest levels, and you're going to go for it. So I love it from Washington's side. On the flip side, I do not understand what the Texans are doing, because last year you watched CJ Stroud get killed by poor
Worse.
offensive line play, and you decided that the best way to fix that was to get rid of your best offensive lineman. And you fired the offensive coordinator who liked working with Stroud, and Stroud liked working with him. So I don't understand, because those are not good ways to keep your young franchise quarterback happy. Those are
Yeah.
not good ways to keep him improving so that his sophomore slump just stays a sophomore slump, as opposed to oh, this guy's not as good as we think he is.
You know what I kind of I get the impression of is that Houston is one of those organizations that similar to maybe a Cincinnati is not willing to give out the big contracts. You look at some of the moves they like when's the last time they've had an in their prime player on their contract on their in their prime contract, so to speak.
Do we count DeAndre Hopkins before he got dealt?
Kind of. I was thinking that in my head too, but I would probably say that's it, and that's a wide receiver
I mean, I guess
position.
Laremy Tunsil. But
Yeah.
even then, that's one guy, like you just said, that's not an entire team. And again, the offensive line was the weakest part of the Texans team last year. It is kind of what kept them from being a bigger threat to Kansas City in that second postseason game. It is what kept them from being a better seed in those play in the playoff standings. And your thought process is, let's go get rid of the best offensive lineman we have. Now, there are other moves they made, like cutting Shaq Mason and trading away Kenyon Green. I understand that because those are the guys who sucked for you. How do you get rid of the one guy who was actually good?
I know.
So, makes no sense. They'll just do the classic Tennessee Titans where they'll draft a tackle at 23 and hope he's as good as God, I can't Laremy Tunsil ever was for him, and then sit there and look shocked when CJ Stroud requests a trade in 2 years. That was the single most head-scratching move of the entire kind of transaction period, if you want. No idea what they were doing.
Agreed.
I guess another slightly head-scratching move, but maybe not in a bad way, just as like a from a logic standpoint, I don't get it. The LA Rams had a 32-year-old wide receiver that they tried to trade away, and then they eventually cut because they didn't want to give him big money. And then they took that money they saved and used it to sign a different 32-year-old wide receiver who is not as familiar as in the system as the other 32-year-old wide receiver was, and is not as good in the run blocking side, which is very important to Sean McVay, and is something very or something the first 32-year-old wide receiver did very, very well for the LA Rams. And oh, you gave this second 32-year-old wide receiver big time money at $46 million over 2 years. As we start going into names, Cooper Kupp is the first one. Davante Adams is the guy who steps in and replaces him. Like again, Davante Adams is still a good player. He's a good wide receiver. And if you want to look at the historical kind of statuses in the league, he's a better wide receiver than Cooper Kupp ever was. I'm not going to debate that. It's just I don't understand the fit as the team and the way that the Rams run their offense and what they ask their receivers to do in both facets of the game. I don't think it's a good fit, and I don't understand why you kind of ran the first guy out of town who maybe didn't want to leave at all just to give a second guy more money.
Not only that, but he's going to take on a role that looks more like, I don't really think he fits either of their, like a Kupp or a Nacua, but he's probably closer in a role to a Nacua than a Kupp. And that's the one you got rid of, is the one he doesn't play at all like. So that's just another factor that doesn't make sense to me. The Rams really felt like they were just like, let's maybe change our strategy. But like let's start drafting, let's blow it up. Like it could be fun, like maybe good for a while. And then it's just like they woke up one morning and they're just like, wait, we were a playoff team who arguably gave the Eagles their best
They
game
were
in the
one play away
playoffs.
from winning. Now it was a Hail Mary play, but they were one
And
play away from winning.
you look at that division, is that division is wide open for the
Oh
next few
yeah.
years.
Oh yeah.
And I think they just were like, wait, why would we do that? And then they just snapped their fingers and said, boom, we're paying Stafford. Boom, we're going to get Davante Adams. And they're all of a sudden back in.
I love that kind of encapsulation by you. Going down, now this is maybe a little bit more free agency specific. We'll go position by position. The quarterbacks, you quickly mentioned Justin Fields. He gets a contract from the Jets that would make you think he's the starting quarterback of the team for this year for sure.
Yeah.
And he's going to have the potential opportunity to make himself a Baker Mayfield type contract down the line, which is maybe 3 or 4 years with more money guaranteed, but 2 years, 40 million. I like it for Justin Fields. He gets another shot to start. I think if you want to look at a fantasy perspective, Garrett Wilson could be in for a massive year. They're friends. They have chemistry together from their time at Ohio State. And if you go back to 2 years ago, Justin Fields has shown you that he's willing to be a, or maybe not willing, maybe that's all he's able to do is he's a one read quarterback who's just going to hammer volume at his number one receiver as we watch DJ Moore have his career year with Justin Fields. I actually don't think this is going to antiquate to a lot of winning because I think the Jets
Nope.
are a dumpster fire. And to be completely fair, I'm not sure how good Justin Fields is and if he's good enough to be masking other teams' deficiencies. I loved him
Yep.
in Pittsburgh because he was a good fit for Arthur Smith and he could do what he needed to do and then go with that defense. But the New York Jets are not the Pittsburgh Steelers, so I could probably see this failing and them being right in the mass or right in the top 10 again for another quarterback next year.
Completely agree. He just I think it's like a it's a buff it's again that like I talked about with this year's draft is it's a buffer deal with a side of like maybe he's not dead yet. Like he's shown the flashes. That's what this deal is to me.
Yeah, the next one, which is more of a comedy signing than anything else, Daniel Jones signs with the Colts
God.
because he thinks it's his best chance to be a starting quarterback. And you know what, Daniel,
He's
you're
not
probably
wrong.
right. Anthony Richardson sucks. And I think this is hilarious because you mentioned it earlier in a group conversation that might be the worst quarterback room ever. It's also hilarious because Anthony Richardson is in an open competition. They've already said this is an open competition going into camp between those two guys. That's
Yeah,
like,
as it should be, to be honest,
oh,
as
I'm not
bad as
saying
they
it's
both
like
are.
it's some like unheard of move and head scratching. It's just comical.
Yeah. Giving another 14 million guaranteed to Daniel Jones, he'll be one of the more rich people to be quite literally incompetent at the job they made a lot of money doing.
Yeah, I guess in terms of quarterbacks that didn't sign, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, we quickly talked about them. One of them's going to go to Pittsburgh, and maybe the other one goes to the New York Giants and acts as like the 1 year bridge quarterback when they draft a Jackson Dart or a Jalen Milroe in the second round.
I actually think maybe I'm way off on this. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to call it.
Yeah, I mean, he still has a chance to complete the Brett Favre prophecy and sign with the Vikings as a
Which would
backup.
make no sense for Minnesota.
Sure, but the prophecy calls for it, so it needs to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I actually agree with you. I think the more time goes by and the more people sign, I think Rodgers just ends up as that kind of odd man out. And it's like, does he really have the ego to say, oh yeah, I'm just going to be a bridge for 1 year for the next guy?
For the Giants,
And I don't even
like
know if ego is right. Does he even have the personality? Because he's just a straight up lunatic.
right.
I think that's all for quarterbacks for the running back market. After last year's spending spree, I think this year was a lot quieter, and that has to do with two things. The caliber of running back that was available is not the same. You don't have Saquon Barkley, you don't have Derrick Henry.
Who got his big extension, who became that first running back to make over 20 million too, should be
Yeah.
mentioned.
And the other part is obviously the quality of the draft class. Last year was viewed as
Yeah.
one of the worst draft classes ever for running backs. This year is viewed as one of the best. Obviously, Najee Harris got his 1 year deal for $9 million from the Chargers. I think that's a perfect fit for a guy you can just run into the ground in a Jim Harbaugh offense.
Yeah.
Aaron Jones re-signed for 2 years with the Vikings, although effectively it's a 1 year. And I like that move as well because the Vikings have no draft picks. They have a first rounder. I guess I just saw they got a third round pick compensatory for Kirk Cousins. So they have that and they have two fifths. So they're not really in the position to be drafting a running back. They need other things. Although they did spend like crazy, and we'll get to that. And that's really it. Like you mentioned, the biggest news was Saquon Barkley a month ago signing the biggest contract in NFL history for a running back. I think after that, we go to the wide receivers. We already mentioned DK and Devontae. Cooper Kupp is going to be a free agent. Okay. I think T. Higgins is kind of, there was kind of a whole lot of news, and then it turned into nothing
Hold
new.
on to nothing.
Yeah,
Yeah.
franchise tagged. And they claim they want to be able to bring him back for a long-term deal, but is Cincinnati really going to do that? I don't think
They
so.
don't want to pay anybody anything, and it's actually quite frustrating that they're gonna do that to Joe Burrow. I know, like, we can get into the Trey Hendrickson thing because he's probably one of the like best player. I know he's not a free agent, but best players, quote unquote, available at this point.
Oh, yeah.
And I just wanted to say that word on the Bengals just not willing. Like, you say that out one side of your mouth, and then you're actively letting Trey Hendrickson basically seek out a new deal because he's going to be too good for you to afford moving forward.
Yeah. The other two wide receivers that I think are worth mentioning, Deebo Samuel was traded to the Commanders. Once again, kind of like the Laremy Tunsil thing. The Commanders think this was not a fluke. We're here to do this continuously. They sent a fifth rounder and they took Deebo on to be that kind of wide receiver too, under Terry McLaurin, is that kind of quote unquote just big body, move the sticks kind of guys. McLaurin can kind of operate in the yardages behind that.
And I think he can play a role in the backfield
He
there with
really can.
like an a very aging Eckler and a Brian Robinson, who I'm not sure is like a complete workhorse type guy.
I agree completely. I do like the fit in that team. And then the last one, Chris Godwin comes back to Tampa on a long-term deal with multiple years guaranteed after that horrific injury, which is actually really good to see from all parties. 3 years, 66 million. Good on the Bucks for rewarding their guy with a long-term contract. Like I said, after that bad injury, maybe you thought, oh, it'll be a 1 year prove it because your ankle was backwards at one point on TV a couple months ago. There was also reports that he left a lot of money on the table. The Patriots had made an insane offer and he just said, no, I want to go back to Tampa Bay. I'll take less money to do it. And that kind of just shows the perfect fit there. So I love that from all parties.
I didn't know about the New England thing, but that makes sense seeing that. I was like 21 and a half. That seems low, and I know he's coming off of a got an awful injury, but that makes a lot more sense that there was more money on the table. Also, like from a Patriots standpoint, like what are they trying? Like
Oh,
I
I'll get
guess you
into
got to
it.
get.
I had them written down as if we were going to talk about maybe some teams specifically. The Patriots got the short end of the stick in this free agency. I think they made a lot of kind of pushes for people. DK Metcalf, I'm sure they were in on it. I'm sure they were in on Debo. There's rumors they're still talking about Brandon Ayuk, but the 49ers just paid him, so I don't know if he's really available. They've obviously been available or rumored for the T. Higgins stuff, but it looks like he's not going anywhere. And let's get into offensive linemen because this is more people that the Patriots needed but got stiffed on. Ronnie Stanley was supposed to be their kind of number one tackle t target, and oops, he's re-signed with the Ravens for 3 years, $60 million. Alaric Jackson, 3 years, 57 to re-sign with the Rams. Dan Moore going from Pittsburgh to Tennessee, 4 years, $82 million. I actually kind of like this because it allows the Titans to push J.C. Latham back over to right tackle, which that was their first round pick last year, and he kind of played out of position. So I like that for the Titans' perspective. On the interior of the offensive line, Drew Dahlman went from Atlanta to Chicago to become the second highest paid center in football, 3 years, $42 million. The Bears also did not stop there. They traded for Jonah Jackson, who. I can see both sides of the argument for
I
him.
do too.
They can see they trade for Joe Tooney, and the Bears completely rebuild the interior part of their offensive line. Maybe you thought the Patriots might be in on that because every part of their offensive line needed help. The Vikings, they beefed up their offensive line with Ryan Kelly and Will Freeze signing for some from big time money, 2 at $18 million and then 5 at $88 million. Aaron Banks gets big time money from the Packers, 4 years at $77 million. Also, as I'm reading this, I don't even know who some of these players are, to be completely honest with you.
No, I
I
mean,
sit here and pretend I know the interior offensive line market. I think
yeah.
they get a lot of money now. I think that's interesting because, like you said, the Patriots were probably in on a lot of these guys, and they ended up with Mac Hollins and Morgan Moses, a tackle from the Jets, and then a wide receiver from the Bills. So they're kind of in a what are we supposed to do now mode, I think, especially at wide receiver, because you cannot roll out that receiver core with Drake May again.
Yeah, don't forget they also signed Josh Dobbs.
Oh, well, that's some big time stuff. They get a third string quarterback because Joe Milton's still there. The edge market. We thought this could be ripe for the Lions to make a splash based on availability of actual players because the edge market was very deep, or so we
Still
thought.
not over it, I think, too.
Yeah, so we thought, and then it quickly kind of vanished with players re-signing. Max Crosby, you mentioned it, becomes the highest paid non-quarterback for 3 days, 3 years, $35 million a pop with the Raiders. And then 4 days later, Myles Garrett. As things usually go in the NFL, a market line gets set and then better players get to beat the market line. Myles Garrett kind of shocks the world with a 4 year extension at $40 million apiece. Jamar Chase loves to see that because he's going to get more than that. He's going to have to pass that or else he's going to kind of complain and do Jamar Chase things. But I guess Myles Garrett just shows that everybody has a price. He's kind of put his career to bed as he's never going to play in meaningful games or win meaningful games, but at least he's going to make a fuck ton of money doing so. And I guess if he's happy doing that, who am I supposed to hate on him for it? So both of those guys were supposedly on the market, don't end up there. Khalil Mack, re-signs in LA for 18 million. Chase Young gets 3 years at 51 million from the Saints. I guess in terms of the first real change of scenery, Josh Sweat goes from Philadelphia to Arizona, 4 years, 76 million. Apparently the Lions were rumored to be in play here, but
Yep.
apparently not, as he ends up in Arizona with his old kind of defensive coordinator. Hassan Reddick goes from, I think, the Jets or from nowhere, because he was kind of the guy last year who wanted a new deal. The Jets traded for him, then didn't give him a
Yeah.
new deal, and then acted shocked and he held out. He goes to the Bucks for 14 million. The Bears signed somebody named Dayo Odeyingbo for 3 years at 42 million. Cool, I guess. I think with a lot of these numbers, I think last year when I was looking back at some of the deals that were signed and I look at those players after 12 months with their teams, I've kind of come to the conclusion like free agency's cool and all, but a lot of these players that are available are not really that good, because if they were good, their teams wouldn't want them to go. Their teams would
Yeah.
pay them. So this seems to just be a lot of overpays for guys that, like, you know what, you were good enough on a good team, and now we just don't need to keep you, or we can't keep you. And that's kind of where the Patriots and the Titans and the Carolina Panthers of the world come in and overspend on players that maybe they don't need to.
I don't know what it is in sports, because it's definitely like this in the NHL too, because they say this, if you can get to free agency, that's like the number one goal as far as setting yourself up financially as an athlete. And I don't know what that is, because like you said, it's like if these players were good enough, they'd be signed. And a lot of times to get to free agency, you're probably, especially in the NFL, best days are behind you in a lot of situations.
Yes,
Again,
I
a bit of an
agree.
overgeneralization. But somehow, some way, some other team is just going to give you magically top dollar that the team that has seen you every single day was not willing to give you. It's just an interesting phenomenon for a lot of those guys.
Yeah, it
I don't
feels
know. Just
I was
my buzzword thought
like I agree.
off of your thought.
I agree, and like I mean, I think a prime example is kind of like the Josh Sweats of the world.
Yeah.
Looked great for Philadelphia, but he also played on an incredibly stacked offense or defensive line. And Philadelphia says, "All right, like, thank you for helping us win a Super Bowl. Congrats on the ring, but we can't give you $18, $19 million a year. So bye."
Right.
And then the problem is they go to a bad situation where they're no longer working with Jalen Carter and why am I Jordan Davis and
Yeah.
all the other cast of just the Bash brothers that murder everybody, and suddenly they don't look as good. So the next player is a perfect example of that. Also from Philadelphia, Milton Williams on the interior of the defensive line signs with the Patriots for 4 years at $104 million. $26 million a year is a lot of money. And are you really going to get the same performance from a guy who no longer has the Avengers around him when he's trying to
Right.
rush the passer or clog up the run game? So I think some of this, sometimes we get caught up in the eye candy. Javon Kinlaw signs with Washington for 45 million, 15 million a year. Grady Jarrett goes to Chicago as they continue to fill holes, 3 years at 43 million. Jonathan Allen and Javon Hargrave both sign with the Vikings. Tershawn Wharton signs with Carolina for 3 years, up to 54 million. And look, these are good players, but are they really going to contribute to a lot of winning? I don't know. I don't think
Right.
so. Moving to linebackers, you saw the off-ball linebacker market kind of get a bump. Derek Barnes re-signed 3 years, 25 million. Patriots got Robert Spillane for 37 million over 3 years. Dre Greenlaw went to Denver for 35 over 3 years. Okay. The cornerback market, I almost said center back because I'm always looking at soccer stuff and I see CB, but
Yeah.
cornerback market gets a big bump. Carlton Davis signs a 3 year, $60 million deal with the Patriots. Lions get DJ Reed for 3 years, 48 million. JC Horn becomes the highest paid corner in the sport. Charvarius Ward leaves San Francisco to go to Indy. Byron Murphy leaves Minnesota. Or no, Byron Murphy stays with Minnesota for 66 million. Paulson Adebo goes to the Giants for 54 million. Again, this is a lot of money. These are all numbers in the high teens for players that, are you really going to live up to that kind of number? I don't think so.
No, and I think they're all good players, but they're not, like we kind of are reiterating here, they're not that top of the line at their position, where there's not like other guys with similar skills that can replace them.
Yeah, I mean, the last position group, the safeties, I'm not going to say bump, but like you've got more guys starting to kind of reach that Jesse Bates number. Javon Holland gets 15 million a year to go to the Giants. Cam Bynum is the one who left the Vikings. He goes to Indy for $15 million a year. Tal Hufanga follows Dre Greenlaw from San Francisco to Denver for 15 million a year. Trayvon Moehrig goes to Carolina for 17 million a year. It's just kind of it's like I said, it's more guys that are good players, but that to me is overpay for safeties.
Yeah.
I guess from there we've gone through the positions. I wanted to talk about some of the teams that I thought either won free agency or kind of looked around and you're like, what are you doing? Or just kind of the big thing. Or let's start with the Lions first, because I think there's a little bit of both there where it's like Lions do what the Lions have done the last couple of years. They re-sign their guys, quote unquote, and they strategically add when they see a good option. DJ Reed for $16 million a year. I don't hate that. I do question if he's actually a cornerback one, or if you think Terry and Arnold's just going to start the season there, or if DJ Reed's going to kind of mentor him for a little bit before kind of seeding. But I thought that was it's a good addition, especially when you look at Carlton Davis gets paid. Is there really that big of a gap between the two? Probably not.
No, if not, I'd take DJ Reed probably. I know
Wow.
Carlton Davis probably had the better last year. But for their careers, I'd probably take DJ Reed over
Yeah,
him.
I'd probably agree with you. They released Za'Darius Smith, which is once again kind of a head scratcher. It's like Za'Darius Smith was a good defensive end, and Za'Darius Smith also never got to play with Hutchinson. So why you have him under contract, why not have a second pass rusher? Now, maybe you want to make the argument, oh, Za'Darius Smith is not a good edge player and he can't play the run game, and we want our guys to do both. It's like, who can do both? Max Crosby, Myles Garrett, they're not available. Who can do both? Trey Hendrickson? Have you talked to Trey Hendrickson? Have you talked to the Bengals? Because I haven't seen any reports linking the Lions to it. There's rumors from fans, but that's just because the fans see, oh my fucking God, Marcus Davenport, who has played three games in 36 months, is scheduled to be our defensive end on the opening day roster of week one opposite Aiden Hutchinson, and that's not good enough. That's a problem. And this is where I kind of said, no. Maybe Brad Holmes is cooking and he's waiting to kind of make his move, whether it be a trade up in the draft, because this is kind of a very deep class at edge, or maybe he's waiting for the asking price for Trey Hendrickson to fall a little bit as every other team starts spending its money and the cap availability is no longer there. And he can go to Trey and say, hey, man, I can't give you 35, but I can give you 30. Maybe he's playing some long-term game, but like this is where I start to get a little nervous. I brought up the Steve Yzerman thing. It's like you can't just be a draft guru if you're Brad Holmes. You need to do a little bit more. You need to be active in other parts of your job.
It's like, who's the greatest example of a GM right now in this league? Howie Roseman.
Yeah, Howie Roseman.
And what has he done year after year? He adds AJ Brown 1 year. He adds Darius Slay a couple years ago. He adds guy after guy. Montez Sweat. He adds guy after guy in critical position. Not like afraid to just like add in these like a DJ Reader, nice pace piece, be patient type things, but in integral positions, they're not afraid to pull the trigger. And
And
that's what the gold standard is.
I would say it's not just adding, it's the different forms of addition. He's aggressive in the draft. He'll trade up if he sees a guy he wants. He's aggressive in free agency. He'll trade for a guy or he'll sign a guy he wants, like you said. It's not just, oh, I add guys in rounds 1 through 7 every single year with 7 draft picks. No, it's every form of addition. He's always active. He's always looking. Nobody is safe. I mean, prime example. The Eagles had signed CJ Gardner-Johnson for 3 years last season, and 11 months later, it's thanks for helping us win a ring. I'm shipping your ass off to Houston. I want another interior offensive lineman. It's just he makes moves, he wheels and he deals, and that's why he's built two different Super Bowl winning rosters. And if you want to argue the Super Bowl that they lost to the Chiefs, that also had a quote unquote different roster, except so he's built almost three separate teams that have all made a Super Bowl. That is incredibly impressive. So yeah, he is the gold standard for GMs.
But again, that should be it, the gold standard, it should be what Brad Holmes looks to. And like you said, I don't know. Like, this is it. The holy shit, English is hard. Za'Darius Smith thing to me makes no sense. Like, what is it? Is it a cap thing for your next big move? I know that's kind of what you just mentioned. Like, has he been picked up? Like, I refuse to believe there isn't another step in there as a fan.
So there has to, you if you go into a season with Marcus Davenport as your second defensive end, you have failed. Like
Yeah.
you're not a team that is serious about winning a Super Bowl. End of. I guess the last thing I can say, and this is about Marcus Davenport and some of the other guys that the Lions continuously sign and kind of then drop their jaws when they end up getting hurt. But it's like the Lions keep signing injured players and then expect them to do anything but get injured.
Right.
So that's kind of the last thing I have there. It's like no one's pushing panic buttons. It's just I start to sit there and wonder when are we going to push the chips into the table? Because you don't have Patrick Mahomes. You cannot be a 15-year contender. That is not possible.
Yeah. And not only that, but it's like you start to worry in my head that it's a Sheila, or well, Sheila's daughter being cheap thing.
I actually
Like
think she's been kind of like
she
willing to give
hasn't.
out like kind of big time signing bonuses
She
to keep
hasn't.
cap hits
Amon-Ra got the
down.
big deal. Goff got the big deal. Who am I missing? Penei Sewell got the big deal. Obviously she hasn't, but you can only make so many of those as the Lions owner before, and like a guy we haven't mentioned is going to be very affected by the Myles Garrett contract. That's Aiden Hutchinson.
Oh, yeah, he's getting 40 plus.
Yeah, and that's got to be like, I just hope that's not what they think in the back of their mind is that, well, listen, we're going to have to pay Aiden Hutchinson so much money. We're just not going to be able to afford a competent other end of that. Other end of that end sounds funny, but other end edge piece like a Davenport that we know we can only get for a couple million because we're going to have to pay the other side so much.
I agree. That would be a little nervous. In terms of some other teams that I think, I don't know, again, I don't want to say one because, again, some of these moves end up looking stupid when you see these big time cap hits, but just some teams that I think did what they were supposed to. The Chicago Bears
Yeah.
they spent quickly. They were aggressive through trading, through free agency. And I think they've kind of attacked all of their weak points. They fixed all three spots on the inside of the offensive line. They did kind of what Ben Johnson would ex you would expect him to do. They want to
Yeah.
build to be able to have a great line to push people around, dictate tempo, and let him get into his bag, quote unquote. They also addressed defensive line, which was kind of a disappointment following that spectacular 8-week run after acquiring Montez Sweat in 2023. And I think the Bears have kind of put themselves in a position where I think if Ashton Jeantie is available at 10 where they're picking, I think they're taking him. I think Ben Johnson has showed you he's got issues with DeAndre Swift in the past, and there's also no second running back. And if you think Ben Johnson's going to come in and kind of replicate what he's done with the Lions in Chicago, you need that second back anyway. And
Yeah,
again,
good
they're kind
point.
of running out of needs because you filled your offensive line, you have tackles, you have two receivers, you have your quarterback. On the defensive side, you have two corners, you have a safety you like, you've now filled up your defensive line. I guess you're still paying Tremaine Edmonds more money than God to be an off-ball linebacker, but you've got him. There's another guy in the middle. Is it TJ Edwards I'm thinking of maybe? But they have a second linebacker. They have their players. I do think they're putting themselves in a position where Ben's going to get himself all the toys he wants to be able to run the offense the way he wants. So that kind of gives me a little bit of nerves in the NFC North in our backyard. Another team in the NFC that's a little bit kind of, like I said, is kind of going for it and scares me a little bit. And it's not just because they beat us, because obviously we all know how hurt we were, but the Commanders, I think they saw the
Yeah.
title appearance. They saw Jaden Daniels' performances and said, look, we don't want a second year regression. We don't want a sophomore slump. We're better than that. We have everything. And you watch them. They add a left tackle. They add a wide receiver too. They keep their offensive coordinator. They added and got younger at def on the defensive side, kind of letting a Jonathan Allen walk, bringing in a Javon Kinlaw. So I think the Commanders are here to stay, and they've kind of closed the gap on a healthy Detroit Lions roster and football team. So the NFC, we kind of laughed, I think, the last year and a half and said, oh, this conference is awful and all the quarterbacks are over in the AFC and, we can kind of dominate. And then you blink and suddenly you're looking around and you've got some people who seem like they're ready to kind of compete.
It's a good point. And going back to the Commanders thing is, I keep going back to this can't be right. That's not what the Commanders do, but it's new ownership. It's a totally different regime. It's not the same culture. It's not the same thing. And they do have different goals. And like you said, want to put Jaden Daniels in the best spot possible moving into year two.
I guess maybe a team on the other side of the spectrum, or the other side of the stick, if you will. Well, mention them slightly. The Patriots, they kind of get screwed. They're unable to land a big time wide receiver for Drake May. They're unable to land any kind of big time offensive line prospects either on the inside or at the tackle side. I don't count Morgan Moses or Mac Collins as big time additions. They spent some money, especially on the defensive side, and like you've got players. It's just you're probably overspending for above average versus getting good to great players.
Yeah.
There again, there's rumors that Ayuk could be on the move. I don't see it. So the Patriots are going to need to be in the market for a wide receiver early. I think Tet McMillan, obviously, out of Arizona. And then honestly, the other thing that I think maybe is definitely a possibility is Travis Hunter. He
Yeah,
kind
so
of
I was going to say.
profiled as a corner. He said, oh, I want to play both ways, but most people have kind of said you can't do that. You've got to pick one. And it seems like it was going to be corner. He was listed as a corner in the combine. But if the New England Patriots, who just spent big money on Carlton Davis and already have Christian Gonzalez, who is probably a top 10 corner in football, there's no more room at corner. And if
Yeah.
they say, you know what, Travis Hunter, we think you're a spectacular athlete with incredible run after catch abilities and great route running abilities, and we think that throughout all your time at Colorado, you only came in for part-time packages, and we still loved you. We want you to be a full-time receiver. I could absolutely see them pulling the trigger there just because they need to get weapons for Drake May. You cannot run back a season of Mac Collins, Demario Douglas, Kayshon Booty, Jalen Polk, Javon Baker. You're going to kill your quarterback's development if you do that.
And not only that, I actually think the way you put that too is the perfect opportunity for him to dabble in both sides, where when the position on defense is already set, he doesn't have to go in and be relied in on too many spots. He can kind of be a certain package or certain formations or whatever you want to use him as, and you can kind of dabble him there and give him a shot there. And really, if there ever was an opportunity for him to do both, it would be kind of in a situation like that, or at least that's how I kind of envision that going down if it were to happen.
I just thought it was interesting just because it seemed like Travis Hunter was leaning towards corner, but with the way the Patriots went, if the Patriots like him at wide receiver over Tet, there's no reason why they can't do it considering they filled their cornerback one and two spots already.
Yeah. Have you say lean, like he hasn't made like a I won't play if a team
Yeah,
drafts him yet.
there hasn't been any
Okay.
declarations, and like I said, I haven't seen anything that says like teams view him as this versus this. Obviously, I'm sure teams are doing that internally, and they're not going to tell anyone that because that's
Right.
their job for the draft season. But it seemed like with him being listed as a corner on the combine and him saying, oh, I'm going to try and play both ways, I just think that if you're going to be doing the both ways, it seems like it's easier to say, oh, yeah, I'm going to have some select designated plays on offense versus, oh, I'm going to casually get dropped in and I'm going to go chase Jameson Williams down the field and hope the ball doesn't get thrown that way. It seems like if you're going to be playing full time one or the other, it's probably better to be full time. Or let me rephrase. If you're going to try and play both as much as possible, it's probably better to be full time corner with part time receiver. But if it is true that he's not going to be allowed to do that, then maybe you open the door up for the other way around.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me too. Yeah.
And then the last thing that I'm not going to spend too much time just because we already did, the Houston Texans are kind of like, what the fuck are you doing? You're going to torpedo your young quarterback. That's all I'm going to say because th there's not much more to say. We already covered it.
And like, what is their plan at receiver too? Like, that was the big issue at the end of the year when everybody got hurt. It doesn't sound like Tank Dell is going to be back day one,
Oh,
from what
I don't
I've
think he's
heard.
playing at all. He just got his knee repair. He just got his ACL surgery done like a week ago.
And Diggs was a 1-year deal.
Yep. Yeah,
So.
they have Nico Collins. I think they signed a couple of like stopgap players that just like fill in a room, but like obviously there is no wide receiver two right now.
Houston. Christian Kirk, that's who they added.
Oh, lovely. Christian Kirk in 2025. Let's be
And
realistic.
Christian Kirk and Braxton Berrios, the
Oh, okay.
TikTok star himself.
Okay, yeah. I think with that, maybe we can wrap it
Yeah, we're talking about Braxton Berrios. That means it's a good time to not be talking about sports anymore.
up.
Sorry, Braxton. I'm sure you're a great guy.
Absolutely. If you made it this far, thank you very much. Good episode. Kind of got back over that hour threshold. And I know with March Madness coming up, we'll start to kind of make churn out the longer episodes again.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.